Good morning. Good morning. We are here this morning to ignite innovation, to deal with strategic initiatives, and to build business transformation. This is the Business Edge Briefing Series sponsored by Redwood Credit Union, and I'm very pleased to have the chance to welcome you this morning, because this is an opportunity. We're going to do more of a workshop than a speaker panel. Yes, that means we want you involved and engaged, and we have a fantastic facilitator who's going to do that with us today. My name is Denise Lucy. I'm a professor of business and the director of our Institute for Leadership Studies, and the very fortunate person who is partnered to Cynthia Murray, who is the CEO of the North Bay Leadership Council. And we conceived this program around 4 years ago, and we are so happy to know that you're enjoying it, because we have many, many returning attendees. We also have many students here today. May I see who you are? I know who you are, but want to say yes, thank you so much for being here and for your faculty joining you. It's a terrific opportunity to learn something really great. I would like to actually introduce Laura Jensen, who's going to speak a little bit about Redwood Credit Union, and thank you so much for your sponsorship.
Good morning, everyone. How about Orange October? I listened to Murph and Mac on the way down from Santa Rosa this morning, and they were so entertaining. So entertaining. So it's great to see a full house here. You are in for quite a treat. Mary O'Neill is a terrific lady, and Andy Ramos is a terrific gentleman, and the next lady I'm sure will be terrific. I haven't met her yet. Thank you. No pressure. Just be terrific. This topic is terrific. You'll get a lot out of this, and it's wonderful, and we are very, very pleased to be partnering with Dominican on so many levels and partnering with the North Bay Leadership Council on so many levels. I want to give a real quick plug to Redwood Credit Union. We are currently engaging in an activity with Schools Rule here in Marin, and every Redwood Credit Union member who has a debit card or a credit card, for every transaction they make, we will donate a percentage to the school's rules organization. And so if from now for the next school year for certain, every transaction you use, every time you make a transaction, we'll make a donation to the organization. If you don't have a Redwood debit card or a Redwood credit card, I would like you to go get one.
For that reason, I mean, education is just so important, and we're devoted to the educational community here in Marin, so I want to make that shameless plug. Enjoy this morning's presentation. Go Giants. Yeah. Have a great day.
I just also want to make a plug, because the Redwood Credit Union really is an educational organization. They, if you go to their website, which I've done often, there are all kinds of opportunities to learn about personal finance. And we actually did a program together a week or so ago where Gene Chatsky came and spoke to 500 people, among whom were most of our students. And it was a great day. And thank you for helping us to do Bite a Reality in the spring for our business students. They'll learn more about themselves and personal finance. Appreciate it. I'd like to introduce Cynthia Murray.
Thank you, Denise. Good morning. Well, today I'm excited to be here to introduce our keynote and our panelists, but I'm really excited to be part of the audience, because we are going to have fun this morning. Emotional intelligence is a subject that has fascinated me for quite a while, and today we're not only going to hear about it, we're going to actually do things to explore what emotional intelligence means. And we're going to be led by an EQ expert, which is Mary O'Neill. She is known for her unique ability to open the minds and touch the hearts of her audiences, so get your hearts and minds open. Her dynamic, upbeat, and content-rich programs have helped thousands of participants pave the way for more successful, productive, and high-functioning relationships. Mary's 2 decades as a licensed psychotherapist enable her to provide audiences with great insight into understanding of how people and teams function and how they can coexist more harmoniously and successfully. Mary is masterful at helping participants easily grasp and resolve the often challenging communication and interpersonal issues that arise among work groups everywhere. Welcome, Mary O'Neill. And with Mary, we have two panelists, and I'm going to introduce them. But one of the key things to know about them, these panelists have both been clients of Mary's. So they've been through the experience of working with Mary, right?
Well, Joanne and I have just met this morning.
Oh, I thought you had worked together. Excuse me.
I've done some work at Marin County.
Oh, okay. So she's worked with the organizations, not necessarily the people. Joanne Peterson has come to Marin County as the head of human resources. And when she came, the headline was Leadership Expert to Head County Personnel Office. So we have many leaders among us this morning. As the Director of Human Resources, she leads the HR team that serves all county departments by overseeing staffing, training, benefits, and employee compensation and classification, equal opportunity compliance, employee relations, labor law compliance, and volunteers. Oh my God. Joanne has led the county's strategic workforce plan, providing clarity of direction to how the organization will best use their greatest assets, their people. This work has recently been expanded to lead the county's five-year business planning process. This effort is focused on creating a stronger connection between resource management, technology investments, and workforce development. The former Director of Human Resources at Seattle Public Utilities, Joanne led an HR team that managed and operated personnel and safety services. In addition to her HR role, she was Director of Utility Operations and Director of Management Services. Joanne has been a lecturer at the University of Washington's Evans School of Public Affairs, and she earned her master's degree in public administration at that university. And our next panelist is Andy Ramos. Andy has over a quarter of a century of experience in the financial services industry. He began his career at Redwood Credit Union in 2002 and has quickly risen up the career ladder to become the Senior Vice President of Member Experience. Don't you just love that title? Member Experience. Andy has been chapter president of NAHRAP, which works for more Latino home ownership. Prior to RCU, Andy was a marketing manager at Golden Bay Federal Credit Union and branch manager at Stanford Federal Credit Union. He has his master's degree in organizational leadership from Chapman University and a BS degree in business from Cal State Monterey Bay. Please welcome our keynote and panelist.
So good morning, and thank you so much for the introductions. And I'm really excited to be here. This is a topic that I love. And how many people are familiar with the subject of emotional intelligence? Good, okay. Yeah, because actually Cynthia and I were just saying over here that you never want to go on the assumption that people actually really know. And my goal this morning when we're together is to really not take the mystery out of it because we're familiar with it, but to really define it for ourselves. I really think, Michael, yeah. You can't hear me.
Okay, all right. I'll go over here. Okay, here we go. So really, my role this morning is to help us understand and break it down a little bit, but I want you to work with it because I can teach it, but really it's Andy and Joanne that have learned to really implement it and can really attest to the impact that creating an emotionally healthy workplace really has, what it's all about. So I really think they're going to land it for us today. And I also have created an assessment that we'll be using so that you get a chance to actually measure behaviorally how you show up as an emotionally intelligent individual. And we'll also define it. You know, you have handouts there that I'll go over in a moment with you. I do want to say that some time ago, not so long ago, about a month ago, I was teaching a program in Lafayette, Louisiana on emotional intelligence. And I had a three-hour program I was doing, and I went on the assumption that everybody knew what EQ was, and so I started talking about it, and one young woman raised her hand, and she said, "What is emotional intelligence?" And I thought, oh my goodness, of course, not everybody. I mean, it's a word. There's a lot of buzz in the workplace about emotional intelligence, and, you know, for good reason, because research has really shown that emotional intelligence plays a critical role in creating high productivity, high performance, and greater job satisfaction, without a doubt, right? People with a greater degree of emotional intelligence actually have an ability to be able to develop rapport easily and win over the respect and trust of their colleagues. So it's really, really important. But they're even the most prolific researchers in the field of emotional intelligence don't agree in terms of what the definition is. So I think today, the way I look at it is my role, as it's been said, is to facilitate a conversation and to have fun and to, you know, go into this and look at it. What does it mean to be an emotionally intelligent individual? You know, we are emotional creatures by nature, first and foremost. There are emotions everywhere, all the time. They're in the room right now. You know, I awakened very early this morning. I always get anxious before I talk. You know, my emotions, I'm keenly aware of the role that they play in my life, as most of us are. But I think what happens for so many of us is we are less familiar when they derail us. Right? We can go on autopilot in our lives sometimes, you know, and not recognize that emotions are at play. And I think our job in terms of becoming more emotionally intelligent individuals is to really begin to recognize that our ability to understand our emotions and our feelings and the impact that they have on our relationship to other people, that really how well we interact and get along with others has a lot to do with the ability to recognize and understand our feelings. And when they're showing up in a way that may not be healthy, what do we begin to do to stop? You know, to pause, to take a breath, and to recognize that the beauty of being human is that we are able to choose one way over the other. That's the thing that separates us from everybody else. We have the ability to choose one way over the other. So today, while we're together, I'm going to aim to give you a general overview. We'll use the assessment. I'm going to invite a conversation with Andy and Joanne. They'll be talking about the initiatives that they've rolled out at their organizations. They'll be talking about the success that they've seen as a result of that. They'll even tie it to the bottom line. You know, it really does make a difference in terms of productivity and performance and retention, retaining people. You know, I had lunch the other day with a friend of mine who teaches at USF in their MBA program, and she was saying that what she's seeing more than ever is that we're having a talent crisis. And she said it's so hard to keep people these days because the millennials are coming in and they're wanting very much to be treated differently than many of us were treated, you know, and when we were first working. And they really are looking for kinder leaders. They're looking for emotionally intelligent workplaces. And so there is a lot of buzz centering around emotional intelligence in the workplace, and again, for good reason. And I have seen, I do a lot of executive coaching these days, and the people that reach out to me are really asking for help. They're great at driving results and generating revenue and that sort of thing. But what they really want help with is how do I be a kinder, gentler leader, you know? How do I learn to win others over? Because emotional intelligence is a non-cognitive ability. It is the ability to communicate effectively, to be able to recognize that what you're about to say may not land well, and to stop and pause and consider that your interpersonal relationships at work and in life in general are so important, and that you get to stop and notice. The more intelligent you are, the more emotionally intelligent you are, the more you get to stop and notice how your behavior is going to impact that relationship. And that's where I get excited. It's like if you have a value, right? If your value is creating great relationships at work and in life, then how do you align that? How do you align that value with your actions? And I think by answering that question and recognizing that we can learn at any given moment, that's the beauty of emotional intelligence, that we can learn at any given moment how to be more emotionally intelligent, right? Our IQ we're sort of stuck with. But our emotional intelligence gets better and better as we age. So it's very exciting. So at any rate, basically, there's a lot of buzz in the business community about it. There's also a lot of misconception. I will tell you, the very first time I taught this program many years ago, I think it was over a decade ago, it was at a financial institution, wasn't Redwood Credit Union, and I was teaching it for the executive team, and as they walked in, one of the individuals said to me, Mary, should we get out our hankies? And I said, no, that's not what emotional intelligence is about. And that's the, you know, misconception. Even when Andy and Joanne and Denise and I were on the phone talking about emotional intelligence, we had differing ideas about what it is. I want to assure you this is not going to turn into a hug fest today. That might be fun. We're in California, after all. I suppose we could do that. But it isn't the woo-woo stuff. I really want to nail it and talk about, you know, the use the assessment and join with others in the conversation. So let's look first, if you will, over at your handout where it says the EQ Edge, Why Emotional Intelligence Rules in Business. And what have I done with the PowerPoint? Here we go. Okay. Okay, so first of all, The first point that I want to make is that emotions matter. As I said before, they're in the room right now. I mean, everybody has some emotion. You might be tired. You might be torn between being here and needing to be somewhere else. You might have had something happen last night at home. Maybe you stayed up too late. You're tired because of that. But we all have emotions, and we need to recognize and understand that they do have an impact on our lives and how we show up. How many people in here have ever been at the receiving end of negative emotions, right? And has it distracted you from your work ever? Yeah, right. And how many of you have ever been at the receiving end of positive emotions and noticed that it changed you in some way, right? Emotions are contagious. They're in the room right now, and they affect everything that we do. I was reading in Daniel Goleman's book last night, this study that these researchers had done some years ago where they put three strangers in a room and they were sitting in silence for 2 to 3 minutes. And what happens, this is called mirroring apparently, right? What happens after 2 or 3 minutes, the person who's the most emotionally expressive transmits their mood to the other two without saying a word. So when people are together, emotions spread. And I'm sure you've seen that in your own world, your own life, right? Where you might be impacted by someone else's mood, either brought down or brought up by them. So emotions matter, and they really are, our ability to understand and recognize our own emotions play a critical role in how we show up in the workplace and in life. There is a link between EQ and your success, and Joanne and Andy will talk about this today. Really, what they're seeing more and more is that emotional intelligence plays a critical role in productivity and performance and job satisfaction. You can achieve a competitive edge by developing EQ. And now, again, I teach emotional intelligence, but our two panelists today are going to be able to really talk about that. And Andy and I have already talked about that. I've been doing some work with Redwood Credit Union for some years now. And we've been doing, we did an emotional intelligence program, I guess it was 3 years ago, right? Yeah. And we really saw that the things are changing. And Andy was telling me about that. When I asked, I think it was Christina who could join me on the panel, she said, you have to have Andy come because he lives, breathes, and eats EQ. So he was telling me all about the changes that he has seen. If you look here on the first page, what EQ is, you'll notice that there are four different definitions. As I said, even the most prolific researchers, Daniel Goleman, John Meyer, and Peter Salovey, they can't agree. So what I did here was at the very top is define it simply. It is the ability to read, understand, and respond intelligently, right? So think about, if you will, the last time you were really highly charged emotionally. Can you think of something? You'll think of something where you're really emotionally charged. Yeah? Okay. You don't have to share it. But just think of that. You know, Daniel Goleman actually calls that an emotional hijacking moment, right? I can relate. Yeah, I have two kids, you know, I get emotionally hijacked. But when you're in that state, just think of it for a moment. How intelligent do you feel, right? We're usually not acting very intelligently when we're in that place. Why is that? Because when you're emotionally charged, you're actually in the right hemisphere of your brain. That's where the emotions lie, and you're all excited, and you can get carried away. Your logical left brain language skills are really left brain facility, and so when you're really highly charged, your judgment goes out the window. And that's why we have to be so careful. I think it was Bierce Ambrose once said that speak when you're angry and you'll make the best speech you'll ever regret, right? So we have to be careful. So it really is about your ability to read, understand, and respond intelligent to your own emotional signals. Are you paying attention? Are you on autopilot? You've had that experience of driving from one place to the next, arriving at one place and going, whoo. You know, that was me behind the wheel, right? And you weren't under the influence or anything, but there you are, an autopilot. So our role, I believe that our role is really learning to get off of autopilot and pay attention. This is a practice, I believe, of obtaining wisdom. And at the heart of any wisdom practice are two tools, and that's the tool of observation and the tool of self-inquiry. And the more that we can learn to stop and recognize that that's our job, to become more emotionally intelligent, we want to become more observant. And then we want to inquire within. That's really our role. I also want to say that when I was teaching a program up at Redwood Credit Union earlier this year, we had just done a leadership program. I was driving home, and I stopped in San Anselmo. I was feeling pretty good. I think it went well that morning. And I was shopping in a boutique in San Anselmo. I'd taken the afternoon off. And I ran into Daniel Goleman, and I just heard him speak. You know, he's the fellow who's popularized. He didn't, you know, invent or coin the term, but he popularized emotional intelligence with his book in 1995. And I've recommended his books now for years. Fellow's great. I've heard him speak. He's really an academician. Is that the way you say that? Yes, okay. I really like what he has to say. And so I saw him, and it was just himself and his wife and the clerk. So I felt kind of good that morning, or afternoon, I should say. So I went up and I introduced myself, and I said, I just done a program on leadership, and that I recommend his books all the time. And he was very happy to hear that, you know. And we started talking, and I said to him, you know, in all the years that you've been writing about emotional intelligence and the work that I do with leaders, I would like to know, what would you like me to pass on? What do you think is one of the most important things that individuals need to know about emotional intelligence? And he stopped and he thought about it for a minute. And then he said, I would teach them to pause. I would teach them to pause. Right? Because if we are going to choose one way over the other, we've got to recognize that we live in a culture that worships busyness and productivity. We are going, going, going. And in the stress and complexity of our lives, we can often forget our deepest intention, right? And if we tend to align our actions with our values and show up as an emotionally intelligent individual, the thing that we have to remember is we have to slow down. We have to learn how to pause. And when I was having lunch with a friend of mine the other day, we were talking about this, and she was saying, you know, I think that's the key. Most of us forget to pause. So if there's nothing else I could leave you with today, it's that idea, right? We need to learn to pause. Okay, so it helps you recalculate. The way I look at this idea is recalculate. It's like an inner GPS. I remember some time ago being at an airport when they first came out with GPS systems, had never used one before, and I was late, and I was returning a car, and the little voice inside the box, I was unfamiliar with the airport, it's saying, recalculate, recalculate, and I thought, oh, for goodness sake, well, I would if I could, you know, and At any rate, I finally returned the car, but I thought to myself, wouldn't it be fabulous if we had this little voice in our head that every time we were making a wrong turn, you know, going off track in some way, shape, that little voice said, recalculate, recalculate, you know? And we probably do have that voice. We just have to be still long enough to access it. So this, you know, learning to be more emotionally intelligent helps you to recalculate. Pause to activate it. Like Daniel Goleman said, slow down, pause to activate it. And it also assists you with dealing with pressures and demands. And one of my favorite quotes, and I think it's from the military, actually, I'm not sure who to attribute it to, that they say that under pressure, we don't rise to the challenge, we drop to our level of training. Very interesting quote. I love that quote. Under pressure, we don't rise to the challenge. We drop to our level of training, which means if we haven't been trained to be more emotionally intelligent, we need to pay attention to that. We need training. And honestly, the truth of the matter is that the training that we got in the field of emotional intelligence came within our families growing up. That could be good or bad news for you, depending on the family you grew up in. But by the age of 5, you've had a lot of experience with that sort of thing. And, you know, most of us, when we're talking about non-cognitive abilities, we're talking about communication, we're talking about interpersonal skills, we're talking about taking initiative, we're talking about sensitivity. These things are learned at home. And the modeling you got may have been great, may not have been so great. I grew up in a large Irish Catholic family. The modeling I got was not so great. How many people in here would honestly say you were taught effective communication right from the get-go? One. Did I see a hand go up? You know, there's a lot of room for improvement for most of us, right? And so that's the idea. Under pressure, we don't rise to the challenge. We drop to our level of training. What kind of training did you get? What kind of modeling did you get? How were your parents when they were upset? Did they resolve conflict? Did they fight? What did you see? Because guess what? That informed where you are now. And we take that, you know, as children, and we grow up as adults, and we go into the workplace, and then we wonder why some of us are not getting along or not having the greatest relationships. And this is where training becomes vital. I also think this is a nice segue over here to ask Andy and Joanne about the initiatives that they've undertaken in their workplaces, because they've embraced this concept and they've done training with emotional intelligence, and I think I'll just let them tell you what they've done, if it works to do that now. Do you want to come? Oh, they have microphones. Okay, great.
So, thank you very much, Mary. Thank you. Training comes in different forms. And at Redwood Credit Union, when we recognized that we needed to be more emotionally connected to our workforce, we actually did two things: formal training, hiring renowned consultants like Mary, but also doing some things inside the organization that on the surface may not appear to be training, but just by the fact that we're recognizing and acknowledging certain behaviors and habits and patterns in our culture, it then turns into a level of training because we want to focus on the behaviors that we want from our employees. And through the leadership training that Mary shared or talked about earlier, about 3 years ago, we engaged in this process. We really started with assessing where our current reality was with regard to emotional intelligence. And then also with her help, identify what the ideal looks like. And so what you do is then by identifying where you're at and where you want to go, you develop a gap. And then we work towards creating initiatives in our organizations to help close that gap. And in the closure of that gap, we looked at how we run our business. And specifically, what do we do to communicate to our employees, to make them feel valued, to make the connection that we don't just care about them as units or productive souls, if you will, but that we care about them, that we value them as individuals because we're all in this together. And so to do that, we've asked our leadership team to go out and engage in some very specific coaching models where they actually have what we call balanced feedback, where they do engage the individuals in assessing what they're doing well, what they're going to stop doing and start doing. And it really kind of lends itself to creating an engaging workforce around the topic of training. In addition to that, we have something that talking to my colleagues in the car this morning, we want to be very transparent, and that's where the informal training comes in. People feel valued when they're communicated to. If you share information with an individual, there's just an inherent component that they matter, that this information is valuable and that they are worthy of it. And that level of worthiness comes from communicating at many levels in the organization. So we have something called an all-staff meeting, which is pretty much a state of what we call the credit union. And it's every month, and it's a mandatory meeting. And what we do is we speak to employees as if they were business partners in every aspect of what we do in our organization. So it may not on the surface be training, but in fact it is engendering certain habits and a certain understanding of the value that we want to engender in our employees. In addition to that, we look at the individual holistically. So it's not just about the communication and the transparency and wanting to address their emotional needs, but also their physical needs. I think Mary said it very eloquently earlier that we can't separate ourselves from a certain levels of our humanity. And there's a physical aspect to our humanity that's tied to emotional intelligence. And to do that, our organization actually has a program to where we've invested in an organization that's come in to provide healthy lifestyles with exercise and meal consultation and whatnot, so that we can again begin to engender a state of well-being. And so at the end of the day, if we want to look comprehensively at an individual and we want to incorporate some emotional components of their well-being, you can't separate the body, spirit, and soul.
Mm, beautifully said. Woo! Done.
That was beautiful. Thank you. You know, first of all, I want to thank Dominican for inviting us here. When I have an opportunity to talk about the over 2,000 public servants that serve the county of Marin, it's a real privilege. We have over 2,000 employees that provide incredibly diverse work to this community, from our sheriff's office that sometimes we like to see and sometimes we don't like to see, to our fire department, to the doctors and nurses and dentists that serve less advantaged individuals of this community, to social workers and mental health workers, to folks that collect taxes, give permits, and you know, monitor weights and measures and scales and the agricultural industry in West Marin. So it's very diverse, and we attract people and retain people that care deeply about the work that they do. If someone has chosen a career in public service, it's because they really want to make a difference. Not that other businesses don't, but there's a huge amount of passion for the work that they do, and I always like the opportunity to talk about them because I think they are our greatest asset and they're incredibly, incredibly talented. The thing that is different about our ability to apply emotional intelligence from Redwood Credit Unions is that we are a monopoly. Mm-hmm. People do not have a choice. We cannot measure our success by how many customers we attracted today, how many people are there. People don't have, if you want a building permit, you don't have a choice to go to somewhere else. You know, we are that single source of service. And creating the same kinds of things around transparency and a positive experience is still important to us. But it makes it a little bit different of just the attitude people have coming through the door to deal with us because they don't have choice. We have a lot of people that work for us that on a regular basis deliver bad news. Whether you're pulling someone over for a traffic violation or collecting their taxes or saying no to a permitting issue, whatever it may be, determining eligibility for public assistance. There's a lot of really hard things that our workforce sees every day. And we know that we have to be good government in a community that's very smart, that watches government very closely and wants to be engaged in it. And we have this commitment to what is good government and how can we reach good government. I think earlier a headline was read that when I came to the county, they said, they hired a leadership expert. And that was kind of a hallmark of what I did in the utility industry. And when I landed here, there was some pressure to say, what are we going to do about leadership in the county? Mm. We have half of our workforce is eligible to retire in the next 4 to 5 years. 30% are likely to retire. Wow. we have incredibly complex issues that get more complex all the time. We're no longer transactional in nature. How are we going to prepare everyone at every level to practice leadership? And there was a lot of pressure for me to do that. And I told our board the difference when I worked for a rate-based utility is when they wanted leadership development, they handed me $500,000 to go build that. And in the county of Marin, I tell them they handed me $1.98, you know. It was a huge challenge. And so our story really lends itself to a partnership here with Dominican University. In our own backyard, we found a resource that was willing to partner with us and at a really reasonable rate for us to start building the capacity for leadership at all levels of our organization. We have had over 130 people spend 11 days in a leadership academy. And part of the academy is a class project where we demonstrate the return on investment. The first class that went through, they had a class project about improving communications in the organization. And they brought their learnings from around emotional intelligence back to the organization and said, this is what we can do. If we could have these practices, we could really advance how we communicate with each other. And the board listened to them. The Board of Supervisors invested in training 600 employees over a two-month period in this area. And how we saw the difference of that investment is really about, one, creating a common language in our organization. Mm-hmm. There are things that we often captured as the soft skills. And you know, we have people that have good technical skills and then those people with the soft skills. And we were able to clearly articulate what that meant and what it looked like when we saw it. We had a common vision for what we wanted. And we really had a better way to articulate the business case for when we looked for those skills and what the value of it was. And that initiative continues today. We currently have 30 people in this program. We continue to focus on all of the issues around emotional intelligence, and including our communication. And we continue to see, you know, results at all levels of our organization.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Joanne. I love the idea of the soft skills, you know, it used to be, soft skills, they were so insignificant and unimportant. They're so important nowadays. You know, it used to be that I think businesses felt they could squeeze what they wanted out of an employee, and that's not the way it is anymore. You know, as businesses change, so do the traits that we need to have to excel, essentially. So it's really boils down to emotional intelligence, your ability to convey warmth, your ability to establish trust with another person and gain respect from people, your ability to communicate, again, to be sensitive to what goes on. How well do you manage yourself? How well do you manage your own emotions? You know, oftentimes people will say, I'm so frustrated with someone's performance and I need to talk to them. And I'll say, great. And it's how you talk to them that's going to be critical. If you want people to change, they don't change based on what they know. They change based on how they feel. And so you want to be really clear that if you're giving feedback to someone, whether it's your children or someone you're working with, that you're sensitive to how you deliver it. How? Tone of voice, body language, energy you show up with. You know, again, remembering that emotions are contagious. And if we don't step back and engage in that process of self-observation, we won't know how we're showing up. And it's so important to do that, to commit to doing that, to catch yourself, to be willing to catch yourself when you're emotionally charged and recognize, okay, you know, feelings are in the room, you know, the judgment has left the building, and it's time to pause and regroup and really think about, you know, do I want to make this person wrong and feed my ego, you know, or do I want to preserve this relationship? Well, if the latter is what you want to do, you want to make sure that you then consciously choose, that's it, consciously choose to align your actions and your behavior with your desired outcome, with what you value. That's emotional intelligence. It's a non-cognitive ability. And I think it's exciting because we all get to be our biggest, brightest selves, essentially. That's how I look at it. So, all right, so I want to just do one more thing. I want to move on to the assessment because I really think that gives you an idea of where you're at here. And, of course, Andy and Joanne will tell you more about how to build, you know, how do you take the next steps to create an emotionally healthy and emotionally intelligent workplace. So where are we here? I just want to, I'm going to move over here. I think you can hear me over here, right? Can you hear me in the back? Because I want to stand here and look at this with you.
Can I do that?
Just here, turn it around.
Take it off.
Okay.
There's a wireless mic.
Oh, that's all right. I'll this. I have two.
A little more mobile.
Okay, I'll give you that. Okay, thank you. All right, I don't usually use a handheld. So IQ, so we're talking about the difference between the non-cognitive and the cognitive abilities. This is based on the book, The EQ Edge, which I happen to love. When I do executive coaching, I work with the Baron EQI. There are many different tools that can measure emotional intelligence. I have a sample with me if you later want to look at it. I use it because I love it. It gives so much information. It measures your EQ in different realms. And this is based on the book, The EQ Edge, which really goes along with that product. It's written by Steven Stein and Howard Book. And they talk about how IQ predicts 1 to 20% of success in a given job. 1 to 20%. It peaks in your late teens. So, you know, it's kind of downhill from there. It's culture bound. So it really does have a lot to do with where you're living. It's a way of being smart. When you're in school, your grades really matter. It'll get you through. But after that, it's really your ability to be able to get along well with people and interact in a manner that where you will win others over that will make all the difference in your success in the workplace and in life. Your EQ, fortunately, is responsible for 27 to 45% of job success. That's great news, you know, because it means that we've got a lot of room to grow. It's not fixed. It increases with age and with training. We were just talking about that here. More training, more coaching, you can grow your EQ. You can also do it, you know, through reading and committing to practicing new and different behaviors. That's how we change, right? We become aware of how we're showing up. We get clear about what we want to do differently. We take action. And the real key to change is doing things consistently. With the greater frequency you practice certain behaviors, the better you become in terms of your emotional intelligence. It cuts across cultures, and it's a different way of being smart. Gender and EQ are insignificant, they have found. So we, men and women, we're similar in many ways. Females score higher on social responsibility, they found, though, and interpersonal relationships, which really isn't that surprising, I don't think. And empathy. Women have a greater ability to empathize. I don't know if that's right. The men I see in this room, though, I'll bet you have a good degree. A couple of them I know, and they're very empathic. males score higher on, I always get a kick out of this, self-regard. Why is that? And stress tolerance. They're better able to manage stress. So psychologist Daniel Goleman, he has come up with this model, which I have based the assessment on that we're going to use momentarily. The reason I want to use this, and I'll tell you why I created this, it's too unwieldy to use an assessment like the Baron EQI or another tool like that. So I've created this to kind of whet your appetite. There are 30 behaviors in this assessment that you get to rate yourself on. You can just get an idea of what it's like to land this behaviorally. In behavioral terms, how do we show up? And so I thought it would be good for us to assess our emotional intelligence from that, you know, in behavioral terms, and then talk about it afterwards. So I based the assessment that I created on Daniel Goleman's model. Self-awareness, what is it? It just means that we have that ability to tune into ourselves, to know at any given moment, or to choose at any given moment to stop and pay attention. What am I feeling? You know, what's happening for me right now? What do I need? if you're triggered, what's going on? Are you angry? Do you know what the root cause is? Your ability to stop and pay attention and tune into yourself and self-management. Once you know that, once you're tuned in, what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to choose to show up differently, perhaps? You know, how will you use that information then to guide your actions? And then social awareness. It's one thing to be able to know how you're showing up, you know, how you're feeling and what you're thinking and needing, but then how well do you read other people? If you're in a meeting with someone, right, and you've said something and then everybody's looking at you with a blank stare, you know, I don't know, what did you just do? Are you aware of that? Can you read the face of other people? Because honestly, the thing that I'm aware of more than anything is that when people talk about winning others over or behaving differently or giving feedback, what I'm aware of is most of us don't really know. We think we're doing a good job, but we're not aware of the tone of voice that we're using, especially when we're emotional, or the body language that we're using. If you have children, I'll bet they'll point it out to you, right? My kids will say, Mom, that voice, you know, you could use a different voice. And I think, okay, the voice. We back up here and think about this. So, but you, sometimes when we're charged, there's two psychological ways of being in this world. We can be reactive and we can be responsive. And unless we stop and take note, we're often, especially when we're charged, we are reactive. So how do we become responsive? This is basically the model. And social skill has to do with how well you interact with others. I added resilience because I think it's really important to recognize that our ability to rebound is critical. How quickly do we bounce back from upsets? Do you go to bed at night, you know, with your head going around in your head, worried about something that just happened? Or how quickly can you let things go? So resilience is important. Okay, this is Baron, the Baron model. I'm not going to go into this, but this is the model I use when I do executive coaching. The EQ Edge is a fabulous book. I brought it with me. I'd be glad to show it to you. He breaks it down into these five realms. General mood is considered to be an emotionally intelligent competency. How happy are you? You know, if you were to plumb the heart of your own happiness, where would you come up on the scale? Optimism is also an emotional intelligent competency. How optimistic are you? You know, when you're faced with a challenge, do you go after it believing that the glass is half full or half empty? You know, and really, honestly, your happiness, your general mood will spread when you're sitting with others. I mean, at each table, whoever is the most emotionally expressive is probably transmitting their mood right now. So what we'll do now is let's take the assessment. Let's all of us do that together. It's on the table here. So there's one that says emotional intelligence at work. This is it right here. The headline is emotional intelligence at work. And you can, you see there at the bottom, you can pre-assess your scores. I want you to just rank your scores. Where do you think your strength lies? Let's go back to the one I was just talking about here. Self-awareness, self-management, social skill. Where do you think your strength lies? And then after you rate that, go through the 30 questions and see if you can answer them. This is really emotional intelligence showing up in behavioral terms. Oh, yes, it's in, yes, the scale of five.
I don't think I have it.
Oh, okay. So it says here on the page your EQ assessment rating. After reading each of the five definitions, you're to pre-rank them below in order of strongest to weakest. For example, if you think actions of the self may be your greatest strength, give it a number 5. If interactions with others may be your weakest, give it a 1. So you just want to see, because we'll compare that at the end. And when you're finished doing that, you can turn the page and begin taking the assessment. course, you want to transfer your scores. As you can see on page number four, there's a you can put your rating results on page four. Yes, does anybody have any questions about that? So on page number four, if you just want to transfer, if you have number one there, so if you go back to page three, right, you want to take the number that you place there and put it in the corresponding box, and then you add your columns up. You're welcome. Yeah, I'll give you about five more minutes to finish this, and then I'm going to ask you to pair off and share what that was like with the person sitting next to you or at your table. Okay. So if you have finished that, what I'd like you to do is simply share with the person sitting next to you what that was like. Again, I'm trying to just do this so it lands in behavioral terms. What was it like to ask yourself these questions?
Okay. Take a minute, if you will, to bring your conversations to a close and we'll regroup. Okay, may I have your attention?
No.
This is an assertive group. That means you're emotionally intelligent. In the interest of time, because we only have a half hour left, I wanted to do two things still, and that is to find out, I went around the room and I talked to a few people about what did you just notice? Because again, this should just start the conversation. An assessment should raise more questions really than it answers. And so, you know, I especially like number 21, which has to do with your tone of voice and body language, how aware you are of it. I highlighted a few on my own assessment and ones that I'm working on. And the key is to just not see where you are necessarily with your scores, but to really look at which of these behaviors did you rate that you'd like to work on, essentially. So here's what I'd like to do with the time we have left. I want to just pass the mic to a few brave souls who might want to say what they noticed as a result of this, or what your biggest takeaway is from, you know, listening in this morning. And then I really want to turn it back over to Andy and Joanne, because again, they're implementing this, they can land it in real world terms, and I want you to be able to have time to talk with them and to have them answer any questions you have, and also to talk about how to start building an emotionally intelligent workplace, because you may have questions about that, and they certainly have the answers. So who wants to just comment about the exercise? Okay, over here.
My concern in doing a lot of these types of things over the years is how much do we self-correct?
Yes. Yes, we're always working on self-improvement, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. Are we doing, yes, are we answering, giving it the right answer? Right? We're good people.
I found that we were a very dynamic table, that our self-rankings changed dramatically between the first and last page. And, you know, being a guy, we were very self-confident in our EQ, yeah, when we started, but rather not as confident by the time we finished.
That's that self-regard piece. Thank you.
Continuing with the assertive table, I was really surprised on a couple of the things, because the awareness of oneself and others was not the same as the actions.
Yes.
So it's like, oh, there are gaps to fill.
That's the whole point of doing this, right? It starts the conversation with behaviorally, what is this behaviorally? What is emotional intelligence in behavioral terms? And how do we measure up as individuals? What are we doing? Are we building it, creating it? Are we even aware behaviorally of how we measure it within ourselves and with one another? So it starts the conversation.
Getting back to the millennial question and the need for more emotional intelligence in the workplace generationally, as you were commenting, have you any indicators of how millennials score in terms of emotional intelligence versus...
You know, I'll bet that information is out there, and I don't have it to cite right now, but again, Steven Stein and Howard Book, who are working with emotional intelligence and the EQ Edge, they do a lot of research and break it down. So I'll bet they're doing research in that way, but I don't have that right now to cite. Yeah.
He would like Mary to talk to
you. Hi. It occurred to me when I was filling out the assessment that there's probably a component of, would other people agree with my assessment of myself? And that comes in, would my boss, the person I work with, have the same response as maybe my son, who I was helping do his homework with last night and about how I interact with him. And so then it occurred to me that my emotional intelligence might be different for people that I'm, I might have greater intelligence for people that I'm not as close to, but as it comes closer and closer and closer, like my kids, maybe I'm not as intelligent.
Can other people relate to that? Yeah, that's great. That deserves a round of applause. Because that's the truth, you know. It is true. We have less, you know, I don't know why we do that, but maybe we're less worried about showing that real self or that level of intelligence. We lose it sometimes with the people that are closest to us, and we preserve it with those that maybe are a little bit more distant, you know. Yes, Denise.
Well, I need to add to that. First of all, yes. Well, another round of applause for that one, because... Yeah. Because when we work so closely together and for so many hours a day, we start treating our colleagues like family, right? And you start getting too close kind of in terms of letting your real self show. I loved your point.
Yes, over here, okay. Our real selves. I love it.
I like the idea of pausing, and in my work with executives, that's the hardest thing, the value of reflection, so that you become aware. So often we don't do that. There's too much pressure, deadlines, got to get it done, got to get out. So, you know, you just steamroll it instead of stopping, reflecting, and choosing your response.
Yeah, that's so, you know, it's so important to recognize that it's one thing to make it your intention on a daily basis, right, to be more intentional about your intelligence, your emotional intelligence, right? It's a whole other thing to do your part throughout the day. That's the key. You need to have something in place that measures whether or not you're doing it. It's just like if you were on a diet, right, and you were deciding to count calories, you don't just get up in the morning and go, woohoo, you know, good luck today. You know, you decide what you're going to do, and then throughout the day, you keep track, right, of what you're consuming. Otherwise, you'll never stick with that diet. It's the same thing with a behavior. You set your intention in the morning, and then throughout the day, you stop, you pause, you reflect. How am I doing? Am I doing what I said I would do? Because at the end of the day, when you put your head down on the pillow, you want to be remembering not the people you alienated that day, right, but the people that you joined with in some way. Over here, we were talking about pausing. Would you mind reflecting on that?
Well, and I guess that was my comment as well, though he has the better accent. Pausing, I thought that was one of my ahas from today, and I could actually think of a recent circumstance where a discussion came up and I reacted as opposed to responding until I actually did take a breath, paused, pulled back, and redirected it to a completely different place. And so I was thinking about that. I should definitely do that a little bit more often.
Yeah, great. That really is, you know, the just taking that psychological stance, you know, to take a deep breath. Why don't we all do that right now? Let's take a deep breath. It's so easy to do. And it breaks the automatic link between your behavior and your emotions. As soon as you do that, yes, go over here. There's so much to talk about today. We should have the whole day together.
I was thinking throughout the morning when we're talking about the contagious mood, that the negative mood is far more contagious than the positive mood. And you could be on a team and there's like eight of you, but one person in that mood, and it takes the whole team down. And if there's strategies to sort of help immunize you from that or inoculate you from that. And you know, that is the key when we say now that employers are hiring for fit more than skills, because if you don't have the right people, the team won't function. If there's, you know, just as little as one person that isn't able to collaborate, it doesn't fit.
I do have something I want to say about that. I also want to be aware that I want to turn this back to over here. So let me just give you an example of that. How many people have had that experience where you're in a room, you're brought down by somebody else, right? Okay, so what? That's mirroring. That's what's happening. Unbeknownst to us, is mirroring. And I had this experience last year. I was working with two police officers that were in conflict with one another. It wasn't in this county. I won't say where it was. Doesn't matter. But I was brought in because they weren't getting along, and I worked with them for several months. And I would go and I would meet with them and in person, and I would spend maybe an hour with one, an hour with the other, and then 2 hours bringing them together. And I would drive away from this place and I'd have to pull the car over and take a nap. I was exhausted. I couldn't believe how exhausted I was. And I do this work all the time, and I thought, whew, what is going on? I actually consulted with someone because I thought, something's happening to me. And I had forgotten that was what happening was the mirroring that I talk about was taking place right there. And so what was happening was they were very tense, right? The person who's the most emotionally expressive, that mood will spread. They were both tense and angry. I wasn't until I got there, right? And then, again, unbeknownst to me, I'd be in the room and I was catching what was spreading, basically. And when I left, I was wiped out. I would have to take a long nap in the car before I could drive any further. And then I went back the next time once I realized what I was doing, and I said, okay, guys, we're doing this a little bit differently. And I said, I don't think we're breathing while we're together. And they were kind of like, what? But I said, no, I really think that, you know, we're tense here, and what we're going to do before we start is we're going to take a few deep breaths, or I'm going to teach you some diaphragmatic breathing, and we're all going to stay in touch with our rhythm of breathing while we're doing this conflict resolution. It changed everything. I'm serious. It sounds so woo-woo, but it's not. It kept me centered. I was able to drive home without taking a nap, and it shifted the way they were relating to one another. So if you want a technique, yes, by all means, use your breath to anchor you. It will break the automatic link between your behavior and your emotions. You want to stay in touch if you're at a meeting and you're noticing, whoa, you know, things are shifting. I'm getting a little tense here. Nobody needs to know that you've got your hand on your tummy. Do it now. I mean, put your hand right on your tummy right now. Take a deep breath. Just notice, are the walls of your body moving out when you inhale? Do they swing back when you exhale? One would hope so, right? This is how we go with our breath, right? This is a little technique. If you play with that at a meeting, you'll stay in your body. And you won't let the emotion spread, okay? One more question, and then I want to turn this over. Yeah, or comment.
Yeah, well, actually, it is a bit of a question for you. Hypothetically, if someone scored low in the resilience area, what tips would you recommend?
Well, resilience, and do you know particularly what behavior you answered that? Do you want to say even? I don't want to put you on the spot, but... You know, resilience is really our ability to bounce back. There is a wonderful book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's about rebounding that actually a friend of mine, Linda Graham, just wrote. And it's just about the ability to rebound. It might even be called Bouncing Back. I think that's the name of it. And the subtitle is about resilience. Read it. You know, you'll get chock full of information from Linda. She's lives in... I think she's in San Anselmo and speaks regularly on this topic. So that's, you know, our ability to come back. It starts with awareness, and then action. Maybe one more comment, and then we'll go over here. Yeah, okay.
So I've been lucky enough to work with Mary on this because, like she said, she came into Redwood about 3 years ago and did this. We started working for this. And being human, though, it's not perfect. I had a similar situation to the woman over there where one of my staff members said something a couple weeks ago, and it just triggered me. And I didn't respond as bad as I might have 3 years ago, but I definitely didn't respond the way I wanted to, and I'm pretty sure I didn't pause. In reading his face, it was pretty evident that I did not pause. But you can also, you're going to make mistakes as you do this, and so you can bounce back. So you can actually still use this information to bounce back. About 15 minutes after the conversation was over, I kind of stopped for a minute. Okay, man, what was it about that set me off? And I called him back in. I said, let's talk about this. And I apologize for being a little too upset. Not the situation was still a situation, but, you know, I kind of apologized for my response and letting myself be triggered like that, and kind of started to rebuild the relationship a little bit. You know, couldn't change what had happened, but you can actually start to show that you're aware, and I think that was a much better technique than, and I'm not a technique I would have applied 3 years ago before having this session from Mary originally. So you can kind of use this to kind of bounce back when you do have those momentary lapses that are going to happen to us from time to time.
Idea of a do-over. You know, I'm from New York originally. We called them do-overs. You could get it to do-over again. So I say that to my kids when they'll look at me and I'll, oh God, I'd use the voice or something, you know. And I'll say, could we do that over? Could we try that again? And so it's gotten to be a regular habit I engage in. Ask people, can a rewind? Can we do that over? Let's try that again. So at this point, first of all, I want to give a round of applause to everybody that just participated in that. It's such an exciting topic, isn't it, to be emotionally intelligent? So I think Andy and Joanne really can take it from here, and I'll bet you have questions from them or for them, and I'm sure they have other things they want to say to you. So I just really appreciate just being here to talk about this and, you know, facilitate this conversation. So
thank you, Mary. At the end of the day, let's ask this question: so what? Right? So what? So we have all these things in place. We're emotionally connected. How do we know? How do we know that this is actually having an impact on our businesses, on our productivity, on our bottom lines? Today, I can give you some financials and show you that there's been increases in net income and loan volume and many other components of our financials that would say that, yes, something has changed. But at the end of the day, something more succinctly that would be a testimonial to this concept is labor. We have to look at our employees as human capital if you want to start translating it more into business terms. And as we all know, labor and compensation is one of the most expensive and financial investments that an organization makes. So if you just focus on that as it relates to this topic, I'd like to give you some examples of where we've seen some significant improvement. For example, we look at attracting and retaining employees. How do we know that our employees are engaged, that they're living our values and mission and statement? Well, we took an employee engagement survey, and our results were phenomenal. The outside consultant that came in and did this for us rendered back our results after the survey was taken by all of our employees, and we came back at a 98% engagement. And so we sent them back, and well, first they went back and said, there's errors. They went back and they had an independent study done, and they came back and said, no, this is real. And to give you perspective, other organizations in our industry, what they call world-class engagement is at 67%. So we were very humbled by our results. So there is a direct correlation and indicator that the investment that we're making and becoming a more emotionally intelligent organization is truly quantifiable. In addition, we have been awarded the distinction of best place to work for the past 9 consecutive years in Sonoma County, so we're very fortunate to have that. And then specifically speaking about retention, our retention rate is 88%. We have 12% turnover. Again, to put it in perspective, in our industry, turnover in banking is very high. It would be maybe half of that. So again, we can begin to see manifestations of our active involvement in this process. Before I turn it over to my partner, Joanne, we were talking about, you know, this is such a big and expansive topic. You know, what are some things that you could take away from today, maybe just one thing, where you can begin on the journey to emotional intelligence in your organization? And one that comes to mind was given to me, I was influenced by Mike Robbins. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that speaker. He's here from Marin. And he talks about the distinction between recognition and appreciation. In its simplest terms, recognition is about recognizing performance and results, and we all want that in our organizations, right? And it's a good thing, and you celebrate the behavior and results that you want. But appreciation is much more expansive. It's about recognizing the person, recognizing the value that they bring not only to the team, but to the community at large. And so when you start to appreciate people for who they are outside of performance, and I'm not saying do it instead of, but expand it to that to that level, you begin to see some major changes in not only the way that the employee responds and is much more productive, but in the way they interact with each other. So when we talk about things being contagious and the positive energy that people can exude, it comes through appreciation, because then they begin to appreciate each other. So it becomes, again, less linear. There was a study done at Berkeley where they were observing productivity of employees based on different inputs. The employees that were recognized, their productivity went up by 23%. The employees that were shown appreciation, their productivity went up by 43%. So you have a clear distinction between recognition and appreciation. And at the end of the day, a person that feels valued will more likely enroll in your visions and your directives than someone who you have to exercise control over. You don't want people to buy into what you're trying to promote in your organization. You want people to self-enroll because they feel valued, they feel part of the process, they find their voice and their place in what you're trying to accomplish.
We use some similar metrics that Andy talked about. We survey our employees every 2 years, and we have made some significant progress, but I will say we still are slightly below the national business and industry average for engagement in our organization. Ironically, where we've made investments is where we see great improvement. When we ask people, does the organization support leadership development at all levels? We made some significant improvement. We made some improvement in the confidence in senior leadership, and this is a survey that was done in March and April, so fairly recent data. We made great improvements about people feeling that we care about their well-being and the services that they receive from our wellness program, and that they see that as an investment in them. But we have a ways to go. We're a traditionally hierarchical organization that moves, the wheels move pretty slowly, and we're on the path. But the skills and focusing on emotional intelligence are a tool to help us get there. I have a staff of almost 40 people that work for me, and I push on them really hard. And because their demands are so great in our organization. And I'm asking them to move from being traditional, transactional HR folks that filled out forms, made sure that you had the right benefits, and made sure those things kept coming to you through really transactional types of work. And what our customers want is they want HR consulting. They don't want just, they can now fill out the form themselves online. They don't no longer need that kind of assistance. But what they need is consulting to know, how do I support my people? What does that business look like? And so when I look at a place where we've applied emotional intelligence, it's really about making those kinds of changes that are huge in our organization, one in my own department. It's about being aware of the emotions of change. And how are we handling it? How are we reacting to that? And being aware of the emotions of being in a learning environment. Can I learn in public? Can I gain new skills? And how comfortable am I with that? And what kinds of emotions does that bring up for me? You know, Andy talked about the metrics in his organization, and there's a metric that I found helped me advance the kind of work around emotional intelligence in my own organization. And that is that in the county of Marin, the average length of stay of our employees is 12 years. So when I take an entry-level employee and look at their salary and benefits over a 12-year process without, any training, without counting the cost of their laptop, their fire truck, their squad car, their anything else, just the basic compensation, on average, we're making a $1.2 million decision when we say, welcome aboard. Wow. Now, when I can tell decision makers that we're talking about $1.2 million investments in human capital, it gets their attention. We generally wouldn't make a $1.2 million investment for this community without a whole lot of public hearings.
I brought these initiatives forward there is that we would not spend $1 million on a valve for our transmission system if we didn't have a preventative maintenance program. If we didn't know how are we going to keep that valve, that asset, to continue for the organization. And we're making $1 million decisions on people. What is our maintenance program? What are we going to do to invest in those folks? And that made sense. It made sense in an engineering organization. A nugget of information that we talked about. One, you know, just start to talk about the elephant in the room, and that is that we need to recognize that emotions are contagious. And sometimes in meetings, it becomes that kind of elephant that we don't talk about. So when you start understanding it, and recognizing it, you can start a movement in your organization. You know, someone talked about, I think Mary talked about, discipline. And one of the people asked me what I learned when I came to the Leadership Academy here at the Dominican University, and I said, I learned the same thing. A world-class workforce, they weren't often embraced by folks that really were trained and focused on engineering-type skills. And so I would have primarily our chief engineer in my office saying, what's this stuff you're talking about? You told me my 360 tells me I'm really low on empathy. What does that mean? What am I supposed to do? And at one point I said, every time you walk through your work unit, you see that someone has a picture on their desk, a photo on their bulletin board or on their desk, you stop. That's it. There's a photo, you stop. And what you say to that individual is, tell me more about this picture. Who are these folks? None of us take the time to bring a photo to work and put it on our bulletin board or put it on our desk that isn't incredibly meaningful for us. And I have to tell you, this individual did it a little bit mechanically at first. photo, stop. What does that mean to you? But he was so rewarded for it that it became really important. I've left that organization over 4 years ago, and from time to time we connect by email or phone, and he'll say to me, I'm still stopping when I see those photos. And it's still really become really meaningful. So there are things like that that you can really think about that start to make your organization more human and more vulnerable, because vulnerability will always build trust.
Okay. And I'm just so proud of you all for doing it. And for my students who got up at 7 o'clock, got here at 7 and actually didn't wear what they usually wear. I think we should thank them. And by the way, we have something called Exploring the World of Business, and they have to learn how to network and be good, professionals. And so I hope you'll do me the kindness when it's the networking time to network a little with them and help them a little bit with that practice. So I wanted to just again say thank you to our speaker, Mary. What a wonderful experience. I wanted all day. And to our fantastic experts who've experienced this emotional intelligence work and are making a difference for our community. Thank you both, Andy and Joanne. Peter Senge talked about the learning organization 20 years ago, and here we have it. It's really in practice in these two organizations. I thought, because you're all learning folks, I wanted to actually offer some additional programs that we have coming up at the Institute for Leadership Studies. Well, of course, this is our Leadership Certificate, Professional Selling Skills, and Performance Coaching program that we offer through the Institute for Leadership Studies. In fact, the Leadership Certificate is the program that Joanna has described, if you're interested. could talk to Dr. V or let us know. And we have a lecture series coming up. Do you know about the lecture series? Because it's a fantastic partnership with Book Passage. And tomorrow, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand from New York is coming to speak with us. We hope you'll join us. Leanne Panetta coming in a week after that. Dr. Atul Gawande, do you know who he is?
No.
He's going to speak about the end of life and that it's, of course, those who have terminal illnesses, how difficult, but how to make that an experience that doesn't have to be what it often is. Mario Batali, any cooks in the audience? This is a sellout event, by the way. It'll be get your tickets today because it will be really, really full. He's a famous chef. Carla Santana, our own, is coming December 4th. All of these, as you notice, they're different times. Usually they're at 7 o'clock, but we have Leon coming on a Friday at 2 and Mario at 1. They're all here. Dominican University of California, Institute for Leadership Studies and our Barostic School of Business in partnership with Book Passage. Hope you'll come. Oh, I meant here, Dominican. Oh, no, not here. No, these are events with 500 to 800 guests in Angelico Concert Hall. Yeah. And there they are. They look nice up there. Leon, by the way, has an honorary doctorate from Dominican University, as does his wife, Sylvia. Great people. And they help us with our congressional internship program here and the senior who's our student body president gets to go to their internship institute. Then we had this wonderful event a couple weeks ago. Mary, thank goodness you said yes to us. We really appreciate it. And then this really cool opportunity, Decoding the Consumer Mind by Kit Yarrow. We're going to include a book with breakfast. It's a little more expensive that day for $35. We hope you'll come to this program, 7 a.m. on the 12th of November. We already did that fantastic program with Redwood Credit Union. We mentioned that. Oh, no, this is the new one. What am I saying? We're actually going to Santa Rosa in October for the Business Edge. We're going to do women's entrepreneurship, the fastest growing small businesses, our Latino-owned firms, and we will do that same workshop here March 4th with some different speakers. But if you'd love to join us in Santa Rosa, we hope you will. So some educational experiences for you. We appreciate you coming this morning. And please stay and let's visit with each other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey there.
Hello.
I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Ryan Dixon.